Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, January 10th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. I apologize for my voice. I'm a little bit under the weather, but tons of energy for this episode. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send that on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So we are doing something a little bit different for this week's show. We are kicking off a brand new campaign that we're calling These 50 States Are So Gay. We are always urging you to act locally, and then we turn around and feature mostly guests who are working on these uber important LGBT issues nationally. So we created These 50 States Are So Gay, so that we have the opportunity to feature people who are changing the world, starting with their own state. And naturally, with this first installment of These 50 States Are So Gay, we're starting with our home state of Vermont, the Green Mountain State, as we feature three incredible groups. To kick things off, I present to you the RU12 Community Center, an organization that celebrates, educates, and advocates with and for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Vermonters. Here to talk about RU12 is their executive director, Kim Fountain. Kim, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
So just so folks know, we're talking about letters and numbers here, are we not?
Yes, we are. Yes. And we are exploring a name change, which is very exciting. But this name has been with us since 1999, and it's fun and exciting, but does get us into a little bit of trouble, I guess you could say, when people don't exactly know how to say it.
So perhaps if I was in the State House last year and someone pronounced it as RU12, that was funny.
That was painful. Yes, painfully funny perhaps. Yes.
Well, let's back up a step. Tell us all about RU12.
Well, like you said, we celebrate, educate, and advocate with and for LGBTQ Vermonters and have been around since 1999 and have some really strong programming. We're only a staff of five, but have the most incredible interns and volunteers that allow us to do a lot of work throughout the entire state of Vermont, so it's pretty exciting.
Take us through the three different facets. First, how do we celebrate?
Oh, my gosh. That is, we're particularly good on that. And we're focused on now, especially over this past year, and I'll get into that a little bit more later. But we're doing a lot of things, everything from Winter Pride at Killington in February. We're the beneficiaries there, to Women in Desserts, to Burlesque, to our annual dinner coming up in May 4th, golf tournaments, wine auctions, you name it. We're celebrating.
We
have it down because on the educate and advocate part, you know, we have an amazing health and wellness program that does our HIV work and a family program that does our elders and intergenerational work. And we've got our safe space program that does our anti-violence advocacy and things like this. And, you know, those are all very serious and important things that we're doing. And we have a lot of that, a lot of background, a lot of experience doing all that work. And along the advocating part, similarly, you know, at the state level, we do LGBTQ Day at the State House.
Yes.
And things like that.
I was there.
Yes, and that planning is coming up, which is very exciting.
Nice.
And I think that was the first time we actually met in person.
Yes, it was.
That was fantastic. But what Vermont has to offer LGBTQ folks is pretty spectacular, right? So we've had the anti-discrimination laws in effect, you know, for many years, including gender identity, and we've had, you know, adoption by, you know, same-sex couples,
yeah,
and IVF for lesbians, great, and same-sex marriage since 2009. So, you know, we've had all these amazing legal protections, right? And so that leaves us going, well, okay, we're a pretty liberal and wonderful state to be in, so what
right.
do we do now? And a lot of people, it's interesting, have sort of found their way back into the fabric of mainstream society, leaving a lot of folks who are either just coming out or maybe just out of, you know, long-term relationships or maybe who just like to get together with LGBTQ folks saying, what do we do?
Right.
And that's why there's so much emphasis right now on the celebration part, is we're really trying to build community connections that are, you know, that include the advocacy and the education, but also include the building of a really strong and, you know, celebratory LGBTQ culture.
Is Vermont the LGBT mecca that it is known for being?
You know, it depends on what you're looking for. So if you're looking to come to a place where you can get married, raise some awesome kids, and be fully, you know, accepted into your communities. And, you know, and again, that's not even across the state, but in a lot of places, you know, for the most part it is. Then, yeah, sure, we're the Mecca. If you're looking for a place that has a gay bar and gay bookstore and, you know, a community that gets together all the time to do all kinds of LGBTQ things, then no, it's not. That's not what's happening here, you know. And so that's why we're trying really hard at RU12 to start building those community connections again, to really say, great, we have all this wonderful legislative protection, but we really need to find ways to get together as a community again.
Now, am I correct in saying there is not one gay bar in the entire state of Vermont?
You are correct, and it's not. You know, there are nights at different places.
Yes.
You know. Folks run First Friday, which is fantastic. It's wonderful. But there's not a place to go, you know, where you're like, there's my bar stool. Or, you know,
right.
Or I'm going to go meet my friends at the local LGBTQ bar. You know, that's not here.
Now, talk to me about, we love talking about Vermont, and you've articulated, you know, some of the challenges, particularly for people coming out, because there is kind of this expectation here that it's all fine, and mm-hmm. it's not in individual families, or it may not be in individual
right.
families. What else, as someone who, like me, came from New York City and moved here to this great state of Vermont, what other challenges have you encountered?
There's a lot of isolation.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got a quarter of your population living in one county, and then you've got the rest of the state. And we are a small state. There's only, you know, just a little over 600,000 of us, Vermonters.
Right.
You know, and so you have a lot of folks who are in more rural areas, a little bit more isolated, and that makes it really difficult to create community. It makes it really, you know, for people who are in these places that they love living, they love their neighbors and whatnot, but there's just of nothing for them to do that connects them to queer culture.
Right.
And that makes it difficult. Or when they have to access mainstream services, like we're doing this elders work, which we really love, and we're doing it up in the Northeast Kingdom, which, you know, when I first heard that term, I was like, Northeast what? You know?
I'm still not used to it.
Yeah. It was a little jarring, you know. And then I went up there, and it is gorgeous and an amazing place with wonderful people. And yet, you know, a little bit more conservative for a lot of folks. And so we're starting our elders work up there with the Northeast Area Agency on Aging, who are fantastic. And we're doing some really great work trying to bring some, you know, cultural competency to some of the elder care services. And we're creating a safe spaces network for LGBT elders. And
nice.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And when you think about it, if you are in a queer relationship and you're going to visit, you know, a family member in long-term care, how does, you know, being out, sometimes we wonder, how does being out affect our loved one's care?
Right.
You know what I mean? So if I bring my partner and we're going up to visit my mom, you know, in long-term care, do I hold my partner's hand? Do we bring our child?
Right.
We don't have a child. But, I mean, like, if we did, you know, we can bring that child. What do we do? You know, and so there's all that we have to think about. Not saying that, you know, that it's horrible up here. Like I said, we're a pretty liberally minded group of folks, but, you know.
There's a challenge. There's some challenge.
There's everywhere. Yeah.
Talk to me about working with, you know, Vermont. One of the things, whether it's true or not, and we look at the demography and there are different interpretations of the data, but working with LGBTQ people of color in Vermont.
Sure. That's very difficult. And, you know, it's difficult for a number of reasons, including the fact that, again, it's almost like an assimilation moment. There's a lot of incorporation into the mainstream, and also, you know, on the one hand, and on the other hand, a lot of the, you know, being in the whitest state in the country,
right.
We are, a lot of the POC folks are from the refugee resettlement communities. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, encountering a whole lot of challenges on, you know, on that front. And
right.
So to organize around LGBTQ issues, it's a slow going process, but we've started it. You know, and that said, you know, both my partner and I are women of color, so, you know, and coming up out of New York City, it is really a very different experience for us, even organizing, and we're trying to build some inroads in that sense too, so.
Well, as I mentioned, you formerly worked for, I didn't mention this part, but you came from New York City, formerly worked for the Anti-Violence Project,
yes.
Under the direction of the just colossally amazing Sharon Staple.
Indeed.
I'm a little obsessed with her.
And I could see why.
Okay. Why come to Vermont?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you know, well, I was at their LGBT center for 5 years, and then I went over to AVP for 10. And I will tell you, doing that work, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because that's the schedule.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, especially after so many years, you get into a certain position at AVP, you know, in similar organizations, and it really, it doesn't end. It just, it's, the violence happens 24 hours a day, seven days a week.
Yeah.
And it's not somebody just being yelled at. Now, that's horrible, right? You don't want to be yelled at, and you don't want to be attacked. But, you know, there are some pretty severe forms of murder and mutilation and violence that you, you know, you have to deal with, and dealing with their families and loved ones. And it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a New Englander, so I thought, okay, it's time to step away from that type of work at that level and try something a little different. So I actually left New York City without any job.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did, and I thought, I'm just going to take a year off, which is what I did, and then I'm going to figure out what I want to do. And here was this job, you know, and I said, I'm not working in the LGBTQ, you know, community anymore. 15 years of that, it's time to do something different.
Huh.
And this amazing job came up, and I thought, well, okay, then I guess I should do that.
And you know, and you are aware at this point, because you've been there for more than a year, right?
Yeah, just over, yeah.
You know, it's a pretty gay job.
It is a, yes, it is.
Okay,
yes.
Just checking.
Yeah, I know. It's a funny thing, too, because, you know, I have a pretty far left radical politics to me. Like, that's where I land. And so to be someplace where the assimilation is so heavy, it's a strange sort of fit for me, but
yeah.
I really have been enjoying it because it's really making me explore what do I mean by LGBTQ culture. You know, I'm a cultural anthropologist, so that's, you know, what do I mean by that? When people say, why should I do anything with our community when I can just do it with the community I live in?
Right.
You know, and for me to have to step back and say, you know, because if it's... It's sort of like if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
Right? And so if we don't, or like any relationship, if you don't actively work on adding to it and building it and creating a base and creating traditions, then it's going to sort of just be assimilated and absorbed into larger culture.
Okay. But it has come up that the job is pretty gay.
Oh, it's so gay. And I so love it. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. I think I just had a moment of being burned out and being frustrated, and then I thought, okay, you know, enough of the violence, and then here I am at an LGBTQ center with an anti-violence program in it.
Yeah. Well, Vermont is kind of an interesting state to kick off our little These 50 States Are So Gay series with, because, again, as we discussed, there's this assumption that Vermont's there. We're already there. The work is done. Where do you see RU12 going in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years?
I really see us bringing a lot of, you know, cultural mix into Vermont, you know, so that, you know, I was trying to figure out how to do this. How do I convince people that we should build LGBTQ culture, and that's not always just in opposition to something.
Right.
It's not always just because, you know, we're gathering because we're oppressed, but we're gathering because we're queer identified. You know, and so I was talking to Clarence Patton over, he's a board member at Centrelink, and he's used to be the executive director at AVP in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you know, why don't you do, you know, what, you know, like the LA Gay and Lesbian Center does, and just, you know, try holding events that are open to everybody, but it's the LGBTQ event, and we're pretty cool, so everybody will want to come.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, I'll try that. So I did this wine auction in December, you know, opened it up to sort of a general community. And I had more LGBTQ folks there than I have ever seen. I hadn't met half of them before, you know, and it was amazing. And I thought, okay, this is the formula.
This is it.
You just hold amazing events that we sponsor, and folks will come on out.
There you go. And they do come out and they support. How can people get involved with RU12?
Oh my gosh, there's so many different ways. Well, we could always use, you know, people can become donors, which is always very, very wonderful, because even though the recession didn't hit Vermont as hard as it hit other places, it did hit folks with, you know, government funding and things like that, like RU12. And so, you know, there's been cuts, and it would be wonderful to have donors. That's great. But then we also really, really rely on volunteers. And so we have something called the Development Committee Action Team, and they can become part of that and do everything from helping us to put on the larger events like the annual dinner or, you know, Queer Quest or you know, things like that, to smaller events like game night or, you know, a women's night at a local bar, things like that. You know, and it's designed to be any amount that you can give in terms of time and energy.
Great.
We can incorporate you into it because, you know, people have different schedules. So, you get involved with interning, volunteering, and then coming to the events, showing up. That's the huge one. If we can just get a bunch of folks into a room, they always have a good time. People keep saying to me, let's do this again. Let's do another auction or another women's night or, you know. And all I need for folks to do is show up at that point.
That's such a big deal. I mean, it's not even just sending the email and saying what a great event, but just showing up. You don't have to give a ton of money. You don't even have to give a ton of time. It's just saying, I support this. And
yes.
Maybe it triggers some interest. And our age-old question, our favorite question, opportunities for youth involvement?
There are opportunities for youth involvement. We do, our programming focuses on folks 18 and up, but Outright Vermont.
Yeah.
Is the organization that, you know, if for youth who really want to be with other youth, that's where you go. But we definitely do bridge programming, and we do work with folks, our staff volunteers at their events, their staff volunteers at our events. So there's a lot of overlap, a lot of communication. Especially if you're, you know, coming to school and you want to intern, we've got great, meaningful internships here. There are different ways to organize if folks want to organize groups, especially in our health and wellness program. They focus a lot on the 18 to 25 age range.
Right. Lots of ways to get involved.
And elders, we've got great elder advisory committees.
Love that.
So, you know, a lot of times we forget the elders. Do you know what I mean? We forget that people, you know, are still LGBTQ when they're 65, 75.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so we have ways for them to get involved. And then there's people who, you know, have been in relationships for a long time, and suddenly they're like, those end for whatever reason, and you find yourself at 35, 40 saying, what do I do now?
Right.
You know, we've got a library, we've got the cyber center, we've got, you know, different ways to volunteer. So, yeah, just go onto the website and contact us and get involved.
But how would they find that website?
Well, they would just go to www.ru12.org.
The name, I know it's a challenge. It's such a central piece of the organization, and I think it's just such a fascinating challenge for an executive director, which is you, to tackle. So I look forward to those conversations as well. But you guys know I love the work that you do.
Thank you.
And you're going to keep doing this.
Yes, and definitely want to put a plug out there.
Please.
They're not as exciting to some folks, but very, very important Safe Space Anti-Violence Program. A lot of times people, you know, you'll be walking down the street and somebody will yell out some horrible anti-gay or anti-LGBTQ epithet. And a lot of times we absorb it, you know, and
right.
just move on with our day. But it would be great if people could access us. We have free and confidential services for survivors of sexual violence, domestic violence, and hate violence, discrimination, all that. You know, you can either go online and just report it if you want in a secure reporting system, or you can give us a call. And, you know, we do all kinds of things from, like I said, the free and confidential one-on-one counseling to advocacy to helping you go through a system. It's really very supportive, so I want to put a plug out there for that.
Fantastic, fantastic. Again, folks, the website is ru12.org. That's where you need to go to learn more. Kim, what a pleasure.
Oh, it's been wonderful talking with you, Ken.
You do great work here in Vermont. On behalf of all of our Vermonters, keep doing this.
Thank you so much, and I hope to talk with you soon.
Thanks, Kim.
Take care, Ken. Bye-bye.
1, 2, 3, 4, tell me that you love me more. Sleepless, long nights, that's what my youth was for. Oh, teenage hopes arrive at your door. Left you in the
All right, folks, and we are back. Will we continue our tour of LGBT Vermont and turn our attention to Vermont Cares? Vermont Cares is an organization that works for and with Vermonters affected by HIV and AIDS to promote well-being through a continuum of prevention, support, and advocacy services. Here to talk about Vermont Cares is their executive director, Peter Jacobson. Welcome to this show. It's So Gay.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I gave just a very brief sentence about Vermont Cares. What does it look like on the ground?
On the ground, we are working every day, and I do mean every day, with people around the state to stop HIV in its tracks in our state, and also to help people who are infected. with just the basic needs so that they can focus on staying healthy. It's a really beautiful, inspiring, and sometimes challenging job, but we're lucky to do it.
Talk to me about the landscape of HIV and AIDS here in Vermont.
Yeah, it's apt for this show especially, since about two-thirds of the people we serve on a daily basis are gay or bisexual men infected with HIV. That's about 170 people around the state each year. And in addition to that, we provide outreach, education, free HIV testing, syringe exchange to an additional 5,000 or so Vermonters each year. So we like having a pretty broad range of ways people can engage if they want to learn more about HIV and their status.
Now, you mentioned our favorite word, education. Mm-hmm. How are we doing, Peter, with awareness of HIV and AIDS these days?
I would like to say we're doing pretty well.
All right, let's just stick with that. It was great having you on the show, Peter. Have a great day. Now, there's more, isn't there?
There is. Okay. Realistically, we're still seeing more young gay guys coming in our doors who have tested positive either with us or at their doctor's office. And that, to me, indicates that we as a whole community are still having a hard time getting the message out, keeping it fresh and relevant. And I know that frustration. We've been talking about HIV as a community for 30 years now. And prevention fatigue has definitely set in, especially in a state as rural as Vermont, where people feel, I think, kind of shielded from the virus, have this sense that that's a big city problem.
Right. Oh, interesting.
A southern problem. It's perceived as not being in every corner of our idyllic little state, and it is.
Yeah. Are there any common threads that you hear from your new clients who are testing positive about what they say, about what their awareness was of HIV and AIDS before they came through your doors?
Yeah, when I talk to someone who's tested positive recently, what we're sort of hearing is they knew, because that part of the education folks are hearing, they knew that HIV was more treatable. They knew that the medications have advanced dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So people are staying healthier longer. There's not a fear of HIV as a death sentence. I think that's fantastic news. And that said, the desire to keep people safe, we still feel that really strongly. I think there's a sense that if it's super manageable, it may not be as important to use condoms or even have a conversation about HIV risk.
Right. Now, I know for a fact that you like your job.
I am about the luckiest gay there is.
Tell us.
I have my dream job, honestly. It's what I've wanted to do since I was 16. I grew up in rural Connecticut, and when I came out at 13, the first thing my mom told me was that she was concerned I would get sick. She didn't really know about HIV.
Right.
And that sort of lit a fire under me to start an organization in my high school, begin working with my college's organization around HIV. It just feels like that education about how to stay safe is so easily accessed.
But this can also be somewhat draining work, as I well know. How do you keep yourself motivated?
The folks we serve, our clients, keep us motivated every day. They really value staying healthy, staying positive. They are absolutely the driving force and the soul of our organization.
There you go.
It's really, really beautiful.
That's a great thing. Now, you guys host a number of different events there at Vermont Cares. What's your favorite? Not that the others aren't your favorites, but what's the one that gets you going?
Well, the one chance I have to wear a suit in Vermont every year is our big annual auction in March.
People think I'm kidding when I say that. I wore a tie the other day, and it was like, oh, God, did something happen? No, I know Vermont.
It was a flannel tie, though, right?
Exactly. Oh, it was totally and it was hemp. It was fine.
Yeah, it's rare that we have these occasions. So I embrace them warmly. Yeah, it's fun to get gussied up and meet with a bunch of other queer folk and raise money for a good cause. I think it's a great night.
Yeah. Now, do you network much with your colleagues outside of Vermont?
We do. Vermont CARES is part of a number of sort of regional or national organizations or training networks. We're happy to have helped spearhead the New England Alliance for Gay and Bisexual Men's Health. We thought that was really important because the health needs of gay and bisexual and otherwise queer men are so much greater than HIV, and also HIV is an integral part of our health. So
yeah.
We wanted to just make sure that the perspective Vermont brings to HIV care was part of that alliance.
And how would you define that perspective? You know, we're so focused on Vermont for this week's episode, and so trying to get across to everybody else that it's a little different here, as each state is a little bit different. What contributes to that Vermont perspective?
Well, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how much to toot our own horn. I'm so proud of the people that I get to work with every day. So I guess I'll just say what Vermont really has going for it is its rurality, ironically. It's tiny communities. We can stay so connected that our case managers, whether that be in Rutland or Montpelier or St. Johnsbury near the Canadian border, they know pretty much everyone in town, and they know how to connect to get the resources their clients need.
Yeah.
So if we have someone who's homeless because they were kicked out of their apartment because of their HIV, everyone in our organization knows who to go to get them housed quickly. So it could have been an excuse that, you know, working in a rural state with few resources is a barrier to service, but we're using it to our advantage, and I really like that.
Now, down here at the southern part of the state, the AIDS Project of Southern Vermont got hit hard by various government cuts. Is that something that has affected you all?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we almost closed our doors about 5 years ago because of very similar cuts to CDC funding for HIV prevention. We were able to make it back up because the community that we work with really believes in that work, and donations have increased because of that. But it was a hard run for a while. The money that the government has invested in HIV prevention has changed. It's moving to, you know, southern states and states with bigger cities where the impact of the virus is greater, and they're focusing on different ways of reaching people.
Yeah.
So the work we do in Vermont just isn't on their radar anymore in the same way it used to be. And while I think that's sad, I do think it also opens an opportunity for us to network with each other, to reach, you know, the LGBT population in more dynamic ways, and to reach, you know, allies who are at risk, which is also a growing group of people we serve.
Well, we just talked with your good buddy, Kim Fountain.
Ah, Kim.
We love that Kim.
Sure enough.
and talk to her about some challenges and looking 5 years ahead. What challenges are you looking to overcome?
Our biggest challenge is understanding how healthcare reform is going to affect not just the federal funding that supports people with HIV specifically, but how it affects our state as a whole. Vermont is a leader in healthcare reform, and we're proud of that. And Vermont Cares is proud to sort of be allied with that work. And also, it's still a little fuzzy as to how that's going to impact such a small state, which doesn't receive a lot of federal funds for HIV care, HIV housing, HIV medication.
Yeah.
It's integral, important work. And if that shifts or otherwise evaporates, that's going to affect our clients really hard.
Yeah.
So we're trying to brace everyone we work with for potential changes.
That takes a lot of knowledge to figure out exactly how it's going to affect you guys.
And again, in a small state, you get to know everybody who does the work. So,
what's your relationship like with our legislators?
Really positive. Vermont Cares has been around for 26 years now. We're known in the State House. We have a strong presence there. We have an office a couple blocks away from the Golden Dome. And we show up when we need to and sometimes when we don't need to.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that HIV is on everybody's radar, because we think it should be. HIV, for me, still is so critical, same as it was in the 80s and the late 70s when we first started realizing the impact of it. It is still impacting our communities dramatically, and we want to make sure that everyone knows it's preventable. There are ways to get tested for free in our state. It's something we can work on together as a community.
Now, if folks want to get involved with Vermont Cares, what are various ways that they can do that?
We always need volunteers. We're serving, as I said, 5,000 people. We have 10 staff. So
that's not the ideal ratio.
No. Neither is the inverse, but
right.
But we definitely could use volunteers to help out in our offices across the state. We run a syringe exchange. That could always use person power. We, in the Burlington office, could use help with fundraisers. We always need help with filing. Some of our clients in more rural pockets of the state just could use someone to hang out with, talk to, share their HIV status and what that means for them. 'Cause there are parts of Vermont that are really remote and where having HIV still really matters.
Yeah.
Still is a secret. So.
And the syringe exchange program, I mean, that's been going on for a solid 10-plus years, has it not?
Yeah, and the first couple were not uncontroversial.
I would imagine not. I would imagine there are still folks who, I mean, we're looking right now at Holyoke, Massachusetts, right around the corner from us down here in Brattleboro, and there's certainly a lot of drama around that right now.
Yeah, it's an emotional topic. Getting people thinking about drug use and the fact that people do use illegal substances on their block, in the same building they live in, can really raise hackles. So for us, what that meant was meetings with shouting and throwing stuff at staff members,
yeah.
Just huge fireworks, when all we are ever trying to do with this program is keep people from getting HIV or hepatitis, keeping them healthy.
Right.
We're certainly not in a place to advocate drug use, but we do love the people who come in our doors, so we want them healthy.
Yeah. Well, I know that not only do you enjoy your job immensely, but I know that you adore the people that you work with. Talk to us a little bit about the not just the specific people that you work with, but, you know, the type of people who are engaged with this work. What does it take for someone to be successful and to be able to sustain work in this field?
What is unique, I think, about our organization is that you don't have to have a master's in social work to be a case manager with Vermont Cares. What we're really looking for is a personal passion, something that drives you to the cause. And for a lot of us, that is being LGBT. For some of us, it's living with the virus. For some of us, it's having a history of using injection drugs.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things that bring all of us to the table together to work on this jointly. It's a beautiful, dynamic, wacky staff.
It could be hosting a gay radio show.
Exactly.
It could be anything.
Yeah. And we're all lucky to be engaged in meaningful work. We're happy for it. And then the organizations that we work with across Vermont and across New England are equally dynamic and equally passionate. I feel that every time I talk to Kim or folks from Freedom to Marry,
yeah,
or Outright Vermont. There's so much good work to do, and the people who engage in that work are really, really out there.
Now, what do you think is the responsibility of Vermont? We often talk about Vermont and deconstructing whether or not it is an LGBT mecca, and we can argue both sides of that. But sometimes it can be said that perhaps we're a little bit insular in our happiness. What is our responsibility, do you think, of Vermont to be working with other states that have so much work to do?
I think because Vermont is so uniquely positioned, we do have a responsibility to serve as a role model.
Mm-hmm.
We at Vermont Cares take that role pretty seriously and try to reach out to other rural states to talk with their aid service organizations about how we can use being a small state to our advantage, to not just keep people from dying, but to keep them healthy and alive and well.
Yeah.
That's critical work, and not every state is doing that as effectively. There are states where politically talking about HIV is verboten.
Right.
States where talking about being LGBT is sort of taboo. We're pretty lucky that we have the bandwidth and the
yeah.
ability, and the fact that we can walk into our state house and ask lawmakers to support HIV, and they do enthusiastically and wholeheartedly.
Yeah. And if you're not wearing a tie in State House, it's okay.
Exactly.
It's okay. We're okay with that here in Vermont.
Yeah.
As long as those pants are locally grown, we're totally fine with that. Now, where can folks go to learn more about all the amazing things happening with Vermont Cares?
Our website is vtcares.org. If you're local in the northern, western, central part of the state, we have great HIV testing resources there. Come into one of our offices and get a free rapid HIV test. If you don't live in Vermont, find the testing center nearest to you and find out how to get tested with them.
Yeah, because they really are everywhere, folks.
They really, really are. And I dare say most AIDS service organizations are as passionate as the ones here in Vermont. So.
Now, you mentioned several ways to get involved, and hopefully I will not be out of line in adding one. You would not, if someone went to vtcares.org, you would not turn them down if their desire was to donate some money to you all.
There is a Donate Now button on the homepage, yes.
You're okay with that?
I will not turn away donations.
Okay.
Always welcome.
That is great. I just want to make sure.
Thank you.
Look, there's nothing we like more in 4+ years of the show than talking to people who really enjoy what they do and are making such a huge difference. And we know that you enjoy what you do, and you and your staff are affecting lives. You are affecting lives daily. And I'm sure if we had your clients on the show, they would sing your praises. But my hope is that you know you guys are doing some pretty darn important work there.
Thank you. Thank you. We know we're blessed. We're lucky. And we appreciate this. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
All the best, Peter.
Thank you. To you too, Ken.
Thank you. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we conclude our whirlwind tour of LGBT Vermont and turn our attention to Vermont Freedom to Marry, a nonprofit all-volunteer resource for marriage equality in Vermont. Here to talk about Vermont Freedom to Marry is a member of their board of directors. I do believe their newest member of the board of directors, John Becker. Welcome to this show, It's So Gay.
Thanks so much, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And yes, that's correct. I am the proud newest member of the Board of Directors of Vermont Freedom to Marry.
Look at you. How old is your tenure at this point?
My tenure would, I just had my first official board meeting this week. I was accepted at the end of December. And so, yeah, it's just about a month old.
Look at that. You're an old pro at this point. You're an old pro. Vermont Freedom to Marry, why would we need such an organization here in so marriage-friendly Vermont?
You know, that's a question that a lot of people have. It's very easy for many people to think, well, you know, we in Vermont, we've been through that bruising civil unions battle. We've been through the marriage equality battle. We've done that. We've been there. You know, why do we still need Vermont Freedom to Marry? But a lot of people don't realize that even though Vermont is a marriage equality state, same-sex couples are still discriminated against on the federal level, thanks to, of course, the lovely DOMA,
yes,
the Defense of Marriage Act. So, you know, state-level equality is a huge, huge achievement, you know, that the state of Vermont was able to do. But same-sex couples in Vermont are still not equal in the eyes of federal law. So the work is not done. And also, we have lots of states around the country that haven't come along as far as Vermont has. So one of the other goals of Vermont Freedom to Marry is to really export Vermont's equality success to the rest of the country.
And how does Vermont Freedom to Marry do that? What services do we offer here?
Well, we, like you said, we serve to act as a resource for same-sex couples both in Vermont and from out of state to come to marry in Vermont. So
nice.
there are a lot of, obviously because of DOMA and because not all states recognize the marriages of same-sex couples, there are all sorts of questions, you know, to do with taxes and adoption and, you know, with life and death issues and all
yeah.
sorts of things like that. So we really try to be a resource clearinghouse. And we do all sorts of different activities. Last year was a really, really busy year for Vermont Freedom to Marry. We presented a workshop called Legal and Financial Planning Strategies for Same-Sex Couples and LGBTQ Individuals. And that workshop was hosted and recorded by Vermont Public Television, and it's still being played periodically throughout the state, and it's
Fantastic.
Available online. And it covered all sorts of issues. Like I said, you know, state and federal taxes, adoption, surrogacy, donor agreements, wills, advance directives, power of attorney forms, estates. It was a really, really informative workshop. My husband and I attended, and it drew Vermonters all across the state. I think there were four or five locations throughout the state, and we all interacted on Vermonter directed television. So it was a really kind of a cool, it was cool from a technology standpoint, and it was really, really fascinatingly informative about all of the different steps that, the extra steps that same-sex couples here in equality states have to take to protect ourselves and our relationships.
Fantastic. Now, for folks who do not know John M. Becker, you're quite the busy guy.
I guess so, yes.
Yes, you are quite the busy guy. You write, you're an activist. Why spend your time on a board for Vermont Freedom to Marry?
My husband, Michael, and I were married in March of 2006. And, you know, as crazy as it seems now, with nine states and the District of Columbia welcoming marriage equality for same-sex couples, at that time, at the time that we were married, the only state that recognized same-sex marriage was Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And they had that residency requirement, meaning we had to leave the country to marry each other. And we were living, we were born and raised in Wisconsin, which is a non-equality state.
Yeah.
So for the first 6 years of our marriage, we lived in a state that thought we were legal strangers. So my career took us both here to Vermont, and for the first time, we lived in a state that I believed that our love for each other was equal in dignity to everyone else's. And you know, even if for me as a LGBT activist and a marriage equality activist, you know, even for somebody like me who really knows in the abstract, not in the abstract, but knows the details of why marriage matters
mm-hmm.
and why equality matters, to actually live in a place that gives you that dignity is such a profoundly honoring experience, a humbling experience, you know, that I really wanted to give back. Because Vermont Freedom to Marry was really the group that spearheaded the civil unions and marriage equality pushes here in Vermont. So, you know, it was twofold. It was the sense that I really, really wanted to give back, to say thank you to these people who worked so hard that my marriage could be equal in this state. And also because of my conviction that the work isn't done and that we really need to move this along federally as well as to our sister states.
Yeah. And you mentioned our sister states. What do you think is the responsibility of Vermont Freedom to Marry and just all of us who are doing this work in Vermont to reach out to other states and provide some of what it is that we're doing here?
Well, you know, it's obviously a case by case basis. You know, Rhode Island has this marriage equality as a possibility on the horizon there, you know, a lot of it involves reaching out to state organizations. Illinois is coming up, you know, and seeing what kind of support they need. We also we're a social media presence, and we're actually working on building that up even more, just to keep the word out and keep the momentum going, and raise awareness of marriage equality nationwide here in Vermont. But the assistance to our sister states is really on a case by case basis. And we're also a member of the Equality Federation, which is the nationwide group of the LGBT groups from each state. So while I was living in Wisconsin, Michael and I were working with Fair Wisconsin, which is the Wisconsin statewide LGBT group, and they're an Equality Federation member too. So it's all the equality orgs in each state in the country.
Well, if I may out you for a second, and forgive me for this in advance, but to do a little demographic demonstration, you perhaps do not fit the mold of who we imagine to be a marriage activist. You are an activist in his late 20s, correct? Should I say mid-20s? I don't know if I say mid or late.
I'll be 28 in March, so I think you're safe saying late 20s.
Okay. Sorry, I feel bad about that one now. We might go back and edit that. But, you know, the question is about marriage activism. All right, where are the youth advocates? Where are the youth advocates? You know, and I'm only a few years older than you, and I certainly work with a ton of college students and try to engage them in these issues. And there are any number of activists in their 20s who are like, yeah, it's just not my issue right now. How do we get more people involved to convince the whole community, the age spectrum, this is all of our issue?
You know, that's a really good question. And you know, like as you noted, for me, the impetus for my involvement was very personal. Actually, just 8 months after Michael and I were married in Canada, you know, we'd come back to Wisconsin, obviously, and Wisconsin passed a marriage discrimination amendment. So that was what, you know, the campaign against that was what really galvanized us into activism in the first place. And I was only 21, you know, so it was from a very young age, very personal to me. But for people who aren't in a similar situation in life, I guess my response to that would be that to encourage them to see beyond their own experience. For me, myself, I'm very much a pacifist, right? But when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was up for repeal, did I sit on the sidelines of that because I would never, ever serve in the military? Absolutely not. The fact that any member of our community is forbidden from participating fully in our society because of their membership in our community, in my opinion, is reason enough for us to try to ameliorate their condition, to work to rectify that. Because, you know, when any of us aren't equal, none of us are.
Yeah. What should we be doing, John? So, you know, look, we can read various posts on Facebook and get outraged, but that outrage doesn't necessarily translate into action. And I think spreading information is a great thing, and I don't want to in any way minimize that, because I think the more informed we are, the more we can take action. But then, folks, you know, we get outraged and we see, oh, this is happening in this state and this is happening in this state. What should we do with that energy?
Well, this may sound kind of mundane, but one of the best things that anybody can do, in my view, is just to have conversations. You know, if somebody is a member of the queer community and feels ready and safe to come out, and that they're in an environment where they are not, worried about any harm to themselves, physically, emotionally, if they feel ready to make that step, that does so much for people, because it puts a face on.
Yeah.
On the issue. It's no longer those people. It's my child. It's my neighbor. It's my friend. But, you know, a lot of times queer allies don't necessarily realize that they need to come out too. You know, it's all well and good to support LGBT equality yourself, but letting people know that you're a supporter and why, having one-on-one conversations. You know, I wasn't here for it, but my understanding of the civil unions and the marriage struggles here in Vermont is that something that made a huge difference in that battle was the crazy amount of one-on-one conversations that Vermonters had all across the state. You know, and that really helped to turn the tide, because it brought people out for the first time. It helped people to humanize LGBT people, humanize this group for the first time, and it forced people to really rethink their deeply held preconceptions and, you know, in some cases their long-held religious beliefs that were anti-LGBT. So I really think having those conversations is so important. From a Vermont Freedom to Marry standpoint, we're an all-volunteer organization and an all-volunteer board. So we are always on the lookout for donations of time and money and talent. You know, so get involved with Vermont Freedom to Marry. Get involved with the other LGBT orgs in the state, RUN2, Outright Vermont. Get involved with Vermont Cares. Get involved with, if you're in a college or university town, with the LGBT Resource Center there. That's a great way to do something tangible as well. My husband's a Friday night group volunteer at Outright, and he really finds that experience valuable and enriching. And a way to give back to the community. So there are all sorts of different ways. And one more thing that I briefly mentioned it before, but I read a statistic somewhere about the incredibly small number of LGBT people who donate to support equality organizations. And you know, I always wonder, you know, if we all gave up one latte at Starbucks a month, and instead of having that one latte, donated that money to an organization that's out there working for equal rights for our community, think of the difference that could make.
Right.
You know, so really, if people are able to, consider financially supporting LGBT civil rights organizations, because, you know, these are tough times for everyone, and nonprofits are no exception. So we have to make sure that we keep these groups strong, because they're the ones that are out there working for our equality.
So for our brothers and sisters across the country who listen to the show, and, you know, we're focused on Vermont this episode, how would you describe being gay in Vermont to the other states?
LGBT people in this state, really, in my view and in my experience, people seem to be just wonderfully integrated into the fabric of society here. I mean, I have no problem. I've never been harassed holding my husband's hand walking down the street in Burlington where we live. I know that there are some parts of the state, you know, that are a little bit more
They're conservative parts of the state.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but, you know, at the same, on the same token, New England conservative is often relatively, different than even Wisconsin conservative.
It's a different breed.
Southern conservative, yes. So, you know, it's, and I've never had any problem. One really remarkable thing that we noticed was when we were living in Wisconsin, anytime Michael or I wanted to, you know, sometimes the other spouse was busy and we wanted to make an appointment. So, you know, we had to make an appointment for that person or, you know, order a refill of their prescription or, I mean, all these mundane things you do every day, right? Well, in a non-equality state like Wisconsin, we had to, we'd have to pretend to be the other person because we were legal strangers. So we couldn't, you know, they couldn't tell us anything. If I said, I'm calling to make an appointment for my husband, they wouldn't recognize that. And in Vermont, nobody bats an eye. It's just all of those little day-to-day reminders of your second-class citizenship status
right.
are a lot more distant here. It's a really, I've really, really grown to quickly love this state and really, really admire the people of Vermont for you know, for being so forward-thinking and being so inclusive. Of course, you know, no place is perfect, but Vermont is better than most, in my view.
Well, let me challenge you a little bit on that, because we were talking to Kim Fountain a little bit earlier on in the show, and Vermont is oddly a state that does not have a gay bar anywhere in the state, and certainly some difficulties and some pushback when there are gay events and folks saying, well, you know, we are integrated and we don't need to be separatist in that way. And I certainly, moving here from New York City, there are some times that I long for a place where I know that is just very specifically gay and not necessarily just on a first Friday night. Is that something that you long for or something that, you know, you're cool with?
No, for me personally, I do wish that there would be those spaces here in Vermont. And I think, you know, for me, I believe it's always important to have, especially because the queer community is a minority, a disadvantaged minority group. It's so important to have those queer-specific spaces.
Yeah.
For us to gather and to meet fellow members of our community, and you know, and just feel safe. Because, like you said, you know, even in Vermont, there are places where some people might not feel safe to come out, safe to be themselves, and safe to express themselves. I really do. That's a point well taken. That I do wish that there would be some kind of gay bar or something like that. And I know that because Vermont is a rural state, that presents additional challenges because the population is spread out and much lower than most other places.
Indeed.
You know, and so that core group that would be needed to support a gay bar is dispersed over a much larger geographical area. But I do wish that there would be a gay bar and more queer-specific spaces. But that's just something we'll have to work on.
But then on the flip side, we can get married.
Yes, absolutely. And trust me, I would not trade that.
It depends on the night for me, John. It depends on the night. I'm not going to definitively say one way or the other. Well, there is a lot going on there at vtfreetomarry.org. There are wedding announcements. There's an FAQ for couples. There's explanations of the law. A lot of resources there.
Yes, absolutely. Like I mentioned, we really do strive to be a resource for same-sex couples in Vermont and people who are planning destination weddings in Vermont, you know, because of the fact that the, you know, marriage laws are such a patchwork around the United States, there are a lot of people who do destination weddings like we did, and a lot of people come to Vermont to have that experience, to have that dignity of solemnizing their love for each other in a public way. So Vermont Freedom to Marry is there with helpful information about how to get married in Vermont. We have, you know, a list of resources for LGBT-friendly resources for couples getting married, for married couples here who want to go to co-equality business professionals.
Yeah.
We really strive to be a comprehensive resource for all things marriage-related in this state.
And we would like to tell people that if they want to have their destination wedding here in Vermont, John and I promise to be your ring bearers.
That would be wonderful. I would be delighted.
Look at that. All these promises that we make. Well, while we have you on the phone, anything you want to say about Chuck Hagel?
Oh, Chuck Hagel. you know the I'm I know that you know this, Kenny, of the the LGBT movement seems to be pretty divided about Chuck Hagel. And, you know, I'm somebody who I really do believe in, you know, forgiveness and in allowing people to evolve. You know, most of us wouldn't want to be judged by statements we made 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, but at the same time, I read an editorial in the New York Times the other day that I think I said it best, and I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, that they said that they would really like to hear at confirmation hearings Mr. Hagel admit that his views weren't just insensitive, and that was the word that he used to describe them when he apologized.
Yeah.
They weren't just insensitive, but they were really abhorrent to go after James Hormel the way he did.
Yeah.
In the late 90s was really awful. And then, you know, the message that sent to the queer community about our value as human beings, really, it wasn't just insensitive. It was really cruel and hurtful. So I'd like to hear him go further before I'm ready to forgive him. You know, the way I was raised, you have to admit that you were wrong, and you have to, you know, before you can begin that healing. So
and fully appreciate and fully appreciate the consequences of what it is that you put out there. And insensitive is a really easy word to put out there to encapsulate something that was much more than that.
Right. Yes. Insensitive is a very safe word, but I think it's not the most honest word in Chuck Hagel's case. So
yeah.
That's my hope for him.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, folks can stroll on over to vtfreetomarry.org to learn more about Vermont Freedom to Marry. Of course, for you, what if they want to learn more about the cool things that you, sir, are doing?
Well, they can find me. I blog for the Huffington Post. I blog for the Balearica Project and Back to Stonewall. So I'm writing like crazy. That'd be a great way to find me. I also have a public Facebook page that they can like and follow me there.
There you go.
And I'm on Twitter as well.
Look at that. He's all over the place, folks. This is a good thing. I'm even going to let you, John, and know that there are very few people in the past 197 shows who I have let do this, but I am going to let you close the show with our magic two words of so gay. If you're up for it, you'll know exactly when to say them. Are you up for it?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, you'll know. You'll know when to do it. You'll know when to do it. All right, folks, that concludes our whirlwind tour of Vermont, of LGBT Vermont. Huge, huge thanks to Kim over at RU12, to Peter over at Vermont Cares, of course, to John, who's going to close out our show, Vermont Freedom to Marry. Check out all of those organizations. We will be featuring more of the 50 states coming up in shows in the next few months, so stay tuned for that. Get out there, folks. Go do some amazing things. Use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference in this world. And of course, remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay?
It's been all wrong, 'cause I can't.